Chapter 3. I go back to the medical bay as we shoot towards West Virginia. The doctors there have removed most of the pipe in beloved leader's chest using some sort of laser. Now it sticks out just an inch above his body.
He's alive, but barely,
the trueborn in charge whispers to me when I pull him aside.
He is fine,
I say, narrowing my eyes.
To say otherwise would be heresy. Remember that.
Of course,
he says quickly.
I'll make sure my staff remembers that as well.
It's early morning when we land, still dark. Before we move his gurney out, I instruct the doctors to put a sheet over him, just in case there are stray troops roaming around somewhere. They shouldn't see him like this. No one should. Dr. Zakos is waiting for us outside, along with half a dozen other trueborn scientists who serve as his staff.
Straight to the vats,
he says to two of his men, who sprint inside with beloved leader's body. Then he motions to the others.
The rest of you, retrieve any lauric energy the Anubis managed to siphon out of the ground at the sanctuary. You know what to do.
The men grunt and make haste. Zakos then turns to me.
You did well, Firi Dunra. Beloved leader will surely commend you.
How long do you think he'll be out? I ask.
Hard to tell based on the reports the doctors sent, but he should regain some consciousness soon after he's put into the vats, unless his injuries are worse than anticipated.
Zakos casts a wary eye on the ship behind me.
I'm impressed you made it here so quickly.
The crew of the Anubis are our best, I say. They know how to push the ship to its limits.
Yes, he rubs his chin. Quite the crew, indeed. Given everything they've witnessed, I wonder if they should stay on the ship and make sure everything's in working order.
He gestures to scorch marks on one side of the hull.
Plenty of repairs and diagnostics to be run, I imagine.
I see what he's getting at. Our leader will be okay. He'll awaken stronger than ever, no doubt. But there's no reason for the rest of our fleet to know that our commander is healing in the vats. The fewer people who know about what happened at the sanctuary, the better. When beloved leader is at the helm again, none of this will matter anyway.
I'll take care of it,
I say.
Good.
Zakos nods.
Most of our higher-ranking officers are on warships at this point, but those who are still here are aware of your homecoming. I believe your old quarters inside are vacant, if you'd like to use them.
I nod.
And I'd recommend a cryopack for the eye. It looks like shit.
I've been in battle, I say. Not holed up in safety, experimenting on Piken.
As beloved leader's most trusted disciple, the one in charge of overseeing his plans for Mogadorian progress, it's in the fleet's best interest to keep me safe, isn't it?
He turns to the base, talking over his shoulder.
I'll need some time alone with him. Come see me in a few hours. We've much to talk about. I think you'll find what I'm working on very interesting.
I wonder what this might mean. With Zakos, it's never easy to tell. I turn back to the Anubis. A few of the ship's crew are loitering at the end of the loading ramp.
Back to your posts,
I shout at them. I follow them aboard and patch myself into the PA system.
This is Firi Dunra, voice of beloved leader, I say. All crew members and troops stationed aboard the Anubis are to stay on the ship until further notice. In addition, we are now on a communications lockdown. Any off-ship transmissions must be cleared with beloved leader first. Then I head off the ship. It's been so long since I've been inside the base that I'm unprepared for the acrid smell of it. It looks the same, except that the rivers of green liquid that flowed through the main chamber have been replaced by a viscous black ooze, not unlike what Cetricus Ra uses to augment and better our forces.
probably due to whatever experiments and further augmentations beloved leader began testing since I left. Still, my mind floods with memories of this place, of training troops and demanding the best of every vat-born Mogadorian sent to me, breaking whips and stun rods over their backs when they weren't up to snuff. I pass the piken and crawl pens and the cell blocks where I watched humans, Loric allies, and even the occasional Sepan or guard cower in fear. I can't see them, but I know the interrogation chambers are past the cells, stocked with all sorts of instruments and tools designed to extract information. I didn't realize how much I'd missed this place. I ignore my quarters and head instead to the central command room, the heart of Mogadorian progress. I want to know what's happening with the rest of our operations. Unlike the rock walls of the main chamber, it's sleek, every surface a dull gray metal. Computers and monitors cover the walls. A table in the center of the room displays a digital map of our warships across the globe. Most of the Trueborn inside appear to be young officers in training.
"Viri Dunra," a gravelly bass voice says.
I turn to find General Kraw. In the grand scheme of things, it's rare that a Mogadorian dies of old age. So much of our lives are spent fighting that we tend not to expire from natural causes. Kraw may prove to be an exception, though, and not because he shied away from battle. The Trueborn's face is a web of scar tissue and unnatural grooves.
"General Kraw," I say, nodding to him in deference.
He crosses the room in a few heavy steps. When he speaks again, his voice is quieter, so that only I can hear it. I brace myself. When I was kicked out of the mountain base, Kraw was one of the officers responsible for choosing where I would be relocated.
"Dr. Zakos informed me of the situation you found yourself in."
He narrows his one good eye at me, studying my face. The other is a milky white, rendered useless by some injury long ago.
"I acted as I thought beloved leader would want," I say, "but I regretfully let the Loric scum escape. Our skimmers lost their ship somewhere over Texas."
My eyes fall to the floor.
"I understand this failure is unforgivable. If it warrants an end to my life, I will offer my neck to your blade willingly."
Kraw grunts.
"You've always been a good soldier, Dunra. Even when you fail, your loyalty never wavers. You were right to bring beloved leader here. Long may he reign. If you die because of your actions, it will be by his hands, not by mine."
I nod, a small wave of relief rushing over me.
"Sir,"
one of the officers in training stands, removing his headphones.
"Several of our warships are still asking about the Loric ship the Anubis was chasing. I believe many of the captains would like to engage it, if possible."
"Of course they would,"
Kraw says. He glances at me.
"I know you were hoping to head the bastards off, but you've made our entire North American fleet restless."
"How should we respond?" the young Trueborn asks.
"That they're to remain put,"
Kraw says.
"That beloved leader will tell them when they have new orders."
He raises his chin a little.
"And that our invasion of Earth is going just as he designed."
Chapter 4 Kraw fills me in on the state of our campaign. For now, we're in a holding pattern. The Anubis's unexpected flight to the sanctuary changed our timeline. Once beloved leader awakens, his plans will resume, but for now the warships wait in silence. The only anomaly has been the humans who've suddenly begun to display guard-like powers. But according to Kraw, they're more of a curiosity than a threat at the moment. The affected humans appear to all be little more than children, untrained, and incapable of using their newfound abilities in any way that might harm our cause. In fact, it's believed they may prove to be useful in other ways. I get more of a sense of this when I visit Zakos in the afternoon. There are 5 metal slabs that serve as beds lining the walls of his laboratory. 3 are empty. 1 is covered in blood and what looks like chunks of human flesh. 1 has an unconscious human girl with short red hair strapped down to it. Zakos is bent over her, prodding her with some sort of baton wired to an electronic tablet in his hands. "Doctor," I say.
"Ah, Fury."
He drops the tablet on the girl's stomach. She doesn't react.
"I was just about to send for you."
"Who is this child?" I ask. I thought we'd learned everything to know about human anatomy. His eyes light up a bit at this.
"So had I. And yet this girl has exhibited signs of Loric power. Telekinesis, to be specific. We have reports that other legacies have been displayed by these newly powered humans as well."
"Which is why you have her drugged, I'm guessing."
"That's right," he says.
"And that one?" I point to the slab where blood is congealing.
"An unfortunate blunder on my part. It won't happen again. I tried to use the same techniques as my predecessor, Dr. Anu, to isolate legacies. Unfortunately, his methods apparently only worked on Loric physiology. I've made some adjustments to his methods. As you can see, this specimen is still alive. And if she does die, well, several of our warships have teams devoted to collecting new samples for me. I don't think I'll have any problem finding more subjects."
I step closer to the sleeping girl and take a better look at her. Slender metal probes stick out of her chest and arms. Her eyes move back and forth beneath thin lids.
"How did they get these powers?" I ask.
Zakos dismisses the question with a wave of his hand as he moves to a computer terminal.
"I'm not concerned about the how so much as what we can do with them. The how we'll figure out later. The how I might be able to reverse engineer, or more likely, beloved leader will be able to explain."
"How is he?" I ask.
"See for yourself."
I follow him through a door in the back of his lab and out into a huge open area. The place smells like sulfur, and there are big black rectangles spotting the metal floor, pits full of the dark sludge that gets pumped into augmented soldiers and that incubates the Vatborn.
These are the healing vats. "He rests below us," Zakos says. "Already he has begun to recover. It won't be long before he walks among us again."
"So quickly?" I ask.
"Yes," he says, sounding a little annoyed. "He designed this system when he brought us the Vatborn and the great Book of Mogadorian Progress. You must trust in his knowledge, Fury."
I grit my teeth at the implication that I don't, and manage to keep myself from clawing at the doctor's face. Meanwhile, he's taken an interest in my bandaged palms.
"May I?" he asks.
I begrudgingly offer him my hands. He takes off one of the bandages.
"Burns," he says. "Energy-based, but not blaster fire. You should have told me about them sooner."
"They're from some sort of force field I encountered at the Loric Sanctuary," I say. "I don't need them healed. They're a good reminder of what happens when I am less than beloved leader would like me to be."
"He would like you at your full potential."
Zakos drops my hands and points to one of the dark rectangles in the floor.
"I'll get you some clean bandages, if you'll spread a little bit of the vat liquid on your palms. They'll be healed in no time."
I walk over to the vat and stare down into the slick darkness. A few seconds pass before I stick 2 fingers into the black sludge. It's viscous and warm, but when I spread it over my wounds, it starts to tingle, turning cold. I let out a sharp breath.
Yes, Zacho says, coming up from behind me. It can be quite jarring.
He takes my hands again, cleaning off the excess ooze with a towel before starting to rewrap them in clean, white bandages. He's finishing up my first hand when he speaks again.
You are a strong soldier, Fury Dunra.
I don't respond.
I need strong soldiers.
For what? I ask. To retrieve more subjects for you? I'm not a delivery service.
Of course not,
he says with a slight smirk. He starts on my other hand.
I misspoke. He needs you. I'm working on something for beloved leader, a project he is most interested in, a new way to arm our troops.
He's developed new augmentations? I ask.
Something like that, but only the strongest among us will be able to wield his new weapons. Not just trueborn, but those with physical and mental strength, endurance, and loyalty.
He looks me in the eyes.
That's you, Fury, he says. Before he flew to the sanctuary, beloved leader left me with very specific plans and goals concerning the future of Mogadorian progress. And I know that nothing would make him happier than to emerge from the vats with a new force to command. Will you serve our glorious commander and ascend to the level he requires of you?
I stare back at him, trying to process what he's saying, but in the end I know there's only one answer to this question. I will do whatever beloved leader asks of me.
I was hoping you'd say that,
he says as he finishes bandaging my other hand.
I'll begin the preparations at once. I'll send for you when I'm ready. Go get some rest.
He grins.
Evolution can be a painful process.
Chapter 5. After meeting with Zacos, I head to my old quarters at the mountain base. It holds none of my personal belongings, other than a few old uniforms and a dog-eared copy of the Great Book. And yet it feels good to be back there after so many nights camped out in Mexico, wondering how the hell I was going to break through the sanctuary's force field. On the small bed in the room, I sleep the deep, dreamless sleep of one who has been running on nothing but adrenaline for days. I've barely woken the next morning when Dr. Zacos sends for me. It's well past sunrise. I know my body needed the rest, but I still feel lazy, like I should have been awake at dawn and doing something, anything, to help the invasion move forward. I catch myself in the mirror before heading to the lab. My eye isn't as swollen as it was, but has begun to bruise, turning one side of my face into a mixture of purples, yellows, and deep blacks. My mind flashes with thoughts of being tied up in Mexico, beaten by Adamus and Six. I promise myself that if I ever see them again, I will bleed them slowly, making them watch helplessly as their friends die in front of them before I even begin to consider gifting the two of them the release of death. Not for the disgrace they caused me by taking me as their prisoner, but for the injuries they inflicted on beloved leader.
They will pay dearly.
Someone has cleaned up the blood in Dr. Zacos's lab, but he's not around. I loiter there for a few minutes, letting my eyes run over the various notes and documents littering his workstation. Designs for new monsters, potential weapon upgrades, scrawlings about the humans who've developed Loric powers. I'm interrupted by a ragged gasp behind me. I turn on my toes and draw my blaster in one fluid motion. From the end of my weapon, I see the red-haired girl on the metal slab. She looks different than she did yesterday. She's paler, and her cheeks are sunken in. Her lips move, but no words come out, and unlike before, her eyes are open, big and green and bloodshot, staring off into space. I step over to her side. There are all sorts of new contraptions around her bed, big pieces of machinery and computational equipment with needles, tubes, and electrodes hanging from them. I crouch beside her.
"Lucky little human,"
I say. "You have no idea what an honor it is to be in your position. Whatever beloved leader and Dr. Zakos have planned for you will surely make our army stronger, speeding up Mogadorian process and the invasion of your planet. Any pain you endure in this laboratory is for the greater good of my people. You should consider yourself fortunate. Unlike most humans, your death will have meaning." When I finish, her eyes suddenly jerk towards me, wide and full of terror. I smile, knowing she's heard me, that she understands. She takes another gasping breath, and then her eyelids flutter, and she falls unconscious again. That's when I hear a voice filtering into the room from the vats. I go through the door and am immediately hit by the same sulfuric smell as yesterday, even stronger now. "Dr. Zakos," I say, and then I register what's happening in front of me. Zakos stands in his white lab coat over one of the dark pools. He's got an electronic tablet in his hands. In the vat below him is beloved leader, submerged up to his shoulders in black ooze. His face is covered with a slick coat of the dense liquid.
"Beloved leader,"
I say, dropping to my knees with such force that for a second I think I may have cracked my kneecaps.
"Forgive me. I didn't mean to intrude."
"Rise, fiery Dunra,"
he says, his voice a deep bellow filling the room.
"Ah, there you are,"
Zakos says. He raises the tablet in his hands.
"I was just updating our illustrious commander as to the state of his fleet and everything that's happened in the last few hours, including your flight from Mexico. You took control of the Anubis when I was..."
My leader pauses.
"When I was indisposed."
"I did." I hesitate. "I acted as your voice. There was chaos where there should have been order, and I tried to rectify that and act in your interests. I know that I had no right to do this and offer my life as..."
"You have done well, Fury,"
he says, cutting me off.
"In fact, I have plans for you. Call it a reward. By my design, Dr. Zakos has developed a new form of augmentation. I want you to be his first test subject."
"Me?"
"Who better than one who has shown she will stop at nothing to prove her loyalty? The process will be painful. It may push you to the brink of death. I need someone with the will to survive, to endure, to serve as my voice while I mend myself here. My voice and my fist. We're going to make you stronger, unbeatable. And in doing so, you will become the face of this world's end. You'll emerge from this process renewed, my most powerful weapon."
My heart pumps in my chest. Something rushes through me, a feeling of contentment and joy unlike anything I've ever felt.
"All you have to do is make it through the process alive,"
he says. I try to speak without my voice shaking. For a moment, I remember the blood and flesh on the lab table yesterday. That could be me, the first to test this new augmentation. But it is his will.
"It is my purpose to serve you, beloved leader. Thank you for honoring me in this way, despite my failure to capture the Lorik fleeing the sanctuary."
He lets out a few short laughs.
"Don't concern yourself with the Lorik right now, Fiery Dunra. Their fate is sealed,
I've foreseen the end of the Guard and their allies. Their downfall will come from within.
His lips curl up into a smile, dripping black ooze over his sharp gray teeth.
I haven't just been healing down here in the dark. I've been dreaming.
Before I can get any sort of explanation of what that means, he begins to sink back into the vat.
A few more hours, I think,
he says to Zakos before the ooze rises above his lips.
Then I want to see how our new soldier has turned out.
Of course, beloved leader.
And then he's completely covered. Once he's disappeared, I can hardly contain myself. I realize that I've been holding my breath, and letting it out causes my vision to momentarily go hazy as a rush of adrenaline jolts through me. I am the voice of beloved leader. I am the fist that will smash the Lorik and then the humans. I am fulfilling my purpose. When I finally look up, Zakos is standing over me. He's stowed the tablet in one of his big lab coat pockets and now holds what looks like a bone saw in one hand. He points to the door of his lab with it.
Well then, he says, you heard, beloved leader. He's pleased with you and looks forward to seeing how I might be able to improve upon your abilities. So,
he grins.
Shall we begin?
Part 2. Vintaro Ushiba. Chapter 6. Humans are weak pieces of crawl shit. At least the Lorik put up a fight. I was new to war when we invaded Lorien, practically fresh out of the vats, raised and trained to annihilate an entire civilization. There was a blaster in my hand as soon as my fingers could curl around the trigger. I was part of the youngest batch to fight in the invasion. We had one directive, to live the words of the Great Book. Conquer, consume, cauterize, to make beloved leader proud. Hail our beloved leader. We were told that the Lorik were a people who upheld peace above all else. But they didn't accept their fates without resistance. The so-called Guard, the Lorik with powers, fought hard. I lost half my squad to a girl shooting lasers out of her hands and a man who could control flames. And those weren't even the strangest things I saw that day. But the Guard didn't live up to their purpose. They failed to protect their planet and their people. Of course they did. They had no chance against us, against me. But they died honorably, fighting until their last breaths. Most of them, that is. I destroyed buildings where Lorik cowards were holed up, hiding and praying to their useless leaders, hoping someone would save them or that we'd just keep on moving and forget about them. I'm not sure how long it took for the planet to fall. Everything happened in a blur of bombs, blaster fire, and blood. And then it was over. What I do know is that the fight was finished too soon. When we left Lorien, I felt feral, like I could have spent the rest of my years torching that planet's fields, destroying its cities, or better yet, pulling the last of the survivors from their hiding places and slitting their throats in beloved leader's name. Instead, our ships finished off the planet, destroying any hint of life that managed to survive our assault. And Cetricus Ra was pleased. Forever may he reign. Afterwards, I was sent to Earth. In many ways, it's a combination of Mogador and Lorien, inhabited by a people who somehow worship peace and war in equal measure. At first, I had high hopes. I thought I was lucky to be stationed here, that the humans would make worthy prey. They don't, for the most part. They submit. They're easy to control. I've found no sport in dominating them, no thrill in the victory of beating them. Here on this blue and green planet I've been working in the shadows for years, long before we made our presence known. I was one of the many sent to seek out the last of the guard, who proved to be much better at hiding than they were at fighting. Because of this, I've learned all about the humans. I had to, in order to disguise myself and blend into the population when needed. I've faced them head to head as I've hunted the remaining Lorik, intimidated people of power into joining us, and silenced those who saw too much. In all these years, I hardly ever broke much of a sweat. Even when torturing people for intel, like those who unknowingly harbored guard or tried to alert the humans to our presence, they gave up information so easily. I never really got to work them over. Or if I did, it was just for fun, after they'd told me everything I wanted to know already. I'd thought everything would change when our warships descended over their cities. I guess it did in some places where the humans and the guard actively fought against us. Not in Chicago, where I'm stationed, though, where I led a squad of soldiers in a raid on a guard safe house not long ago, collecting one of beloved leader's most valued targets. Here, we allow them to evacuate because beloved leader, praise his name, has plans for this planet, maybe even its people. It is not Lorien. We are not here only to destroy. I do not question his reasoning. I know it to be infallible. And so I've been on patrol, stamping out small pockets of resistance ever since we showed the humans the true face of their masters. A handful of police officers here, a mob of angry students there, a couple of people desperately trying to get out of the city, who happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, just to keep my blood pumping. What I wouldn't give to be in one of the cities where there's a real fight going on. I can feel it in my muscles and bones. The need to fire my blaster and swing my blades. To hold my enemies up by the throat and look into their eyes before finishing them off. I actually miss the old days, before we made ourselves known. I miss the thrill of the hunt. I miss the sweat of battle and the feeling of someone's pulse when their neck is in my hands. I crave carnage and bloodshed, anything but the boredom of dealing with humans. Which is why, when I receive word that my captain wants to see me in the council room of our warship a few days after we stopped over Chicago, I can't help but run my tongue over my teeth and hope that he's giving me a chance to do some real damage. To get back in the fight and end all this waiting around. Not to mention the fact that to be in the presence of the ship's captain is an honor in itself. I'm a Vatborn squad leader, someone who has proven his worth in battle, but my orders still come from lower-level Trueborn officers. I take a skimmer up to the warship and wait in the council room with two other Vatborn veterans. They've got scars on their faces, and one of them is missing several teeth. They've seen action. They're good soldiers. We stand shoulder to shoulder as we wait. None of us speculates as to why we've been summoned, at least not out loud. We'll know soon enough, and then we'll carry out our orders swiftly, mercilessly. We'll make our comrades proud. The captain enters and sizes us up, nodding to himself as if to approve of the selection before him. He says our names. We step forward when called. I'm last.
Vintaru Ushaba.
The captain pauses for a second.
Why have you chosen this name for yourself?
He means my first name. Like all Vatborn, my last name is taken from the place I was created. Vintaru in the old tongue means to raise. That is what drives me. The captain smirks a little. He seems to like this.
I've called you here for a special mission,
he says, beginning to pace back and forth in front of us.
Ever since it came to the attention of beloved leader that some humans have begun to exhibit godlike powers, your squads have been on the lookout for such specimens on the ground. He, in his infinite wisdom, would like to examine a few of these tainted humans himself. From now on, we're taking a more proactive approach to collecting such prisoners. I'm told you three are some of the best of my Vatborn on this ship.
I grunt, nodding my head in agreement, but keeping my eyes on the floor.
Your jobs are simple. You'll each lead infiltration squads and find these Loric-powered humans. Our recon officer will supply you with leads. You have whatever resources you need available to you. Though remember, we're to uphold the peace we promise to the cities who don't resist us.
He shows off a row of gray teeth.
Keep your mayhem in the dark.
Sir!
We all say in unison. He makes for the door, telling us that more information will be given to us soon and that our squads have already been chosen. They are awaiting our orders. He's about to step into the hallway when he stops.
One more thing,
he says, turning back to us.
It's crucial that the subjects are alive when you bring them back.
He pauses for a moment, shrugging.
Anyone who stands in your way is expendable. Now, you're dismissed. Get back down to the barracks and begin your preparations. I want you deployed as soon as the recon officer shares her intel with you.
When the door closes behind him, I grin. I can't help it. Humans with Loric powers. I don't really know how that's possible, and I don't care. I don't have to understand. All I know is that I have a mission. I'm back in the fight, and no prey will escape me. It's time to go hunting. Chapter 7. A few hours after the captain is done with us, the recon officer sends a list of names and locations to each squad leader's tablet. We divide the targets based on location. I assemble my men. They talk quietly to each other. I don't join in or bother to figure out who is who. It doesn't matter what they call themselves. I'll learn their names when they're telling stories of our victories in the future. When they've proven themselves. All these troops have to do is follow my orders. And they will. It's what we were born to do. What will win his favor. Hail our beloved leader. Forever may he reign. Our first target is a teenager in a wealthy suburb north of Chicago, who has been talking on some form of internet media about how he just made his computer float across the room. There are a few photos pulled from his web profile that I can use to identify him. We load up a skimmer with weapons, restraints, and syringes full of a sedation compound, just in case these humans are able to use their newfound powers with any sort of skill. Then we head to the boy's home, where the messages originated, according to the IP address. It's far enough away from the city proper that they must think they're safe. That we might overlook them. Stupid humans, as if our reach didn't span this entire galaxy. The street is tucked away and quiet, full of big houses on big plots of land. The mansion we're going to is at the end of a cul-de-sac, secluded. Still, we take out a few power lines before landing, killing the streetlights. Combined with our stealth shielding, it makes for a fairly quiet approach. We tread silently, the four troops following my lead. There are dim lights moving in the windows of the house. The orange glow of candles and the intense white of flashlights and battery-operated electronic devices. The people inside are likely confused, scared. Just how we want them. The front door is large and thick hardwood. It's a narrow entryway for my squad, so I motion to my left, and they follow me around the side of the house, where floor-to-ceiling sliding glass doors look in on a large room. There's a woman standing inside. She's lighting tall candles in some sort of centerpiece on a side table. Her eyebrows are knit together, forming deep grooves as she moves from one wick to the next. She sees us a moment before one of my troops throws a huge cement planter through the glass door, shattering it. The woman barely gets a chance to scream before our blasters open fire. She falls quickly, knocking the long candles over as she goes down. They ignite a piece of cloth laid across the table, lighting up the room with warm flames. A small smile spreads across my lips. "Find him," I grunt, and my men move. The house is too big, with too many places to hide. Fortunately, most of the people inside come rushing to us, trying to figure out what broke the glass. Why, the woman screamed. There are more humans than I'd anticipated. Maybe friends or family of the owners hiding out in the big house, evacuees from the city who figured they could lay low for a while farther away from the warships. They go down just as easily as the first woman did, most too shocked to react to the sight of our faces. Our weapons. I wonder if their brains even process what's happening before they fall silent. The humans are like the Lorik in some ways. Anatomically, for instance, their bodies don't disintegrate and disappear, becoming one with the universe. With beloved leader. Instead, they lie there, dead, bleeding, a reminder to everyone who sees them that they were unable to survive. They rot, if left in the open, at a far slower pace than our trueborn. The best parts of our leaders disappear just like the vatborn do. A human's end is disgraceful. There's no honor in a death like that. The acrid scent of blaster fire fills the air, mixing with the smoke rising from the flames, which continue to spread across the table. I inhale deeply. For the first time in a long while, I feel satisfied. I feel like I'm doing what I was born to do. The boy we're after makes a brief appearance before turning tail and fleeing, running up a set of stairs. Coward. We chase after him, leaping over bodies, our boots stomping on cold, shiny tile floors in the home's entryway. Before we get to the first steps, a shot rings out. A human holding a double-barreled shotgun starts to reload. One of my men is down. It's his own fault. It was his duty to be watching our left flank. He's not dead, but injured. His left arm is gone, along with his blaster. Fortunately, he still has a dagger. He draws it from his belt and leaps. His shouts are pure rage as he lands on the human, taking him down. The man's head hits the tile floor with a crack. That alone probably killed him. But just in case it didn't, there's the blade. Blood pools on the floor. I leave my trooper to his work and head upstairs with the other three squad members. We find our target in a bedroom, hiding under a desk. I drag him out and lift him in the air with one hand, holding up the electronic tablet next to his head with the other. It's him.
"Stop, please,"
he says, beginning to beg.
"I'll do anything. We've got money. Is that what you want? If you let me go to my parents' room, there's a..."
I jab a syringe into his arm. He goes limp. I let his body hit the floor and motion to one of my men, who picks up the boy and throws him over his shoulder.
"Move out," I say.
Downstairs, my one-armed soldier stands over a mangled mess that was once a body. He appears to have used the hot barrel of his blaster to cauterize the stump where his arm used to be. Human blood drips from his uniform.
"Piece of shit,"
he says, kicking the lifeless corpse.
"That was my good hand."
We leave the way we came, stepping over the fallen. The flames from the overturned candles have spread to the carpet, but are threatening to die out. I spot a large cabinet full of bottles nearby, alcohol. I pull the whole thing down, glass shatters, the alcohol spreads across the floor. As we step through the space where the sliding door had been, the liquid ignites behind us with a satisfying whoosh. Technically, the fire will make it harder for anyone to determine what really happened here. But honestly, that wasn't what I had in mind when I pulled down the cabinet. I just wanted to watch the place burn from the sky once we made it back to the skimmer, to see the night lit up in flames. And just as I expected, the sight of it as we shoot into the sky is glorious. Chapter 8. We drop off the sedated captive at the warship. Our injured man is replaced with a new soldier. He curses under his breath, insisting he can still fight, but I need everyone on my team operating at 100%. Then we head for our next targets. Two more teenagers, this time in Wisconsin, where we don't have any warships located. Our first stop is outside of Milwaukee. A house much smaller than the one we'd found in Chicago. It wouldn't take but a few minutes for this one to burn to the ground. It's the middle of the night when we arrive, setting the skimmer down in the street once again. The neighborhood is quiet. The front door is unlocked. We find one adult inside. He's asleep. Never hears us coming. The subject does, though. He cowers in the corner of his bedroom, tears streaming down his face as he shouts that it was all a joke. He was pranking his friends. And he thought it would be cool if aliens showed up so he could meet them. At least he gets his wish. The only time he shows any sort of bravery is when I reach out to grab him. He swings a lamp at me, breaking it against my chest. I am unfazed. He tries to bolt past me, but only gets a few steps away before the butt of my blaster slams into the back of his head, causing him to crumple like a puppet whose strings have been snipped. I motion to one of my subordinates, and the target is sedated and loaded up. The whole encounter takes 5 minutes, tops. We are precise and merciless in our movements. It's a short flight to our final target of the night. This one in Madison. I fly the skimmer myself, enjoying the feeling of the controls in my hands. My men are silent in their seats behind me for the most part. Eventually, the new squad member speaks up.
"What happened to Gord?"
He must mean the soldier who lost his arm.
"Shotgun," one of the others says. "Human took us by surprise. He lost his arm. Made the guy pay for it, though. Mauled him like a starved pikin who just spotted a juicy crawl."
"Beloved leader would be proud."
"Maybe," I say. "Or perhaps he'd condemn the bastard for letting the human injure him in the first place. Gord should have been paying attention, watching his flank, our flank." After that, my troops are quiet. Our last target has been traced to an apartment complex in what looks like a rundown part of town. She's different from the others we've picked up, if only because it wasn't her own stupidity that put her on our radar screen. Someone, somewhere, tipped off an agency our computer experts are monitoring. We land in a small park across the street. What little grass there is crumbles under our feet as we march through the night. "Eyes open," I mutter as we make our way to the complex. Lots of people crammed in tight living conditions. We can expect resistance. The troops grunt behind me. There are a few humans loitering around the parking lot. When they see us, they freeze. It takes them a few seconds to understand who we are, what we are. Then they run. I move my finger to the trigger of my blaster, expecting them to reappear with weapons or more people, to try to keep us from moving in closer to their homes. But they don't return. Typical. Humans hide themselves away instead of facing their threats head on. The apartment building is made up of outdoor hallways, the front door to each unit opening to the open air. We find the one we're looking for on the first floor. The door goes down with one kick. My men flood in. Out of the corner of my eye, I see blinds part in the window next door. But when I turn my head to investigate, they snap closed again. No one comes out. There are no adults inside, only the girl we're after. She springs from the couch, long, black hair falling over her face, dark eyes wide with fear.
"What do you want?"
she screams.
"Who?"
But she doesn't finish. She must understand at that point. I glance at the photo and stats on my tablet. Perfect match. This was easy enough.
"Take her,"
I say. My men step forward. That's when things start to move. First, it's just the shit strewn about the apartment. Soda cans, books, a few dirty dishes. They start to float above the stained carpet. The girl throws her arms out to her sides. Then there's a sudden bass sound, followed by a wave of invisible force. I'm still in the doorway, and the wave hits me like a brick wall, sending me flying backwards onto the concrete outside. The front window of the apartment bursts out, glass landing all around me. My men inside take the brunt of the attack. Several appear to have broken noses. The shabby coffee table and the trash and junk that had been floating around are now all piled up against the walls. I pick myself up off the ground. Standing alone with nothing else around her, the girl looks more helpless than before. Long, black hair floats around her head, like she's been electrified. Slowly, it starts to fall down. Tears fill her eyes. She pushes her hands out again as my men get to their feet. But this time, nothing happens. No wave of telekinesis, not even a breeze. She looks frantic, her eyes even wider now, mouth open in a silent scream.
"Looks like your power's failing you,"
one of my troops says with a grin. She clenches her teeth and curls her hands into fists. The girl has fight, I'll give her that. She's worthier of our time than most humans.
"John Smith is gonna hunt you down,"
she screams.
"I've seen him in my head. There are a bunch of us, hundreds. You'll never get away with this, you fucking monsters."
I recognize the name she clings to. I know his face, the faces of all the guard who have challenged us, now that they too have come out of the shadows. But she places her faith in false hope. "John Smith can't save you." I step into the apartment and motion to my squad members. "I told you to take her." She bites and claws at my men. Eventually she goes slack. An empty syringe breaks as it's tossed aside. On the way out, I see more eyes in the windows around us, peeking out through parted curtains and slits in blinds. The other apartment doors stay locked. No one tries to stop us. Maybe it's the thrill of the hunt or the high of the destruction we've wrought tonight, but knowing that all of these people think they're safe behind doors makes my blood burn. There are explosive throwing discs on my belt, and for a moment I think of letting them loose, toppling the entire complex. But that's not my mission. Our mayhem must be kept out of sight, at least until Beloved Leader decides that the humans are of no more use to him. Praise his name. Neither of our targets stirs on the flight back to the warship. A few of my men inspect flesh wounds they received during the girl's attack.
"Damn human bitch,"
one of them mutters, the new addition.
"We should wake her up now and show her what pain means. Cut her up just enough to say it happened while we were trying to capture her."
"Touch that girl and I'll turn you to dust myself," I say. "Beloved Leader wants these subjects alive. They're his property. Would you mutilate something that belongs to him?" The soldier is silent.
"Glory to Beloved Leader,"
another says. Again, the skimmer is quiet. The sun is still down when we get back to the warship. I'm sent up to the labs with our targets, carrying both humans over my shoulders. They're light enough, fragile. There are several true-born Mogadorians in the ward, huddled around various human specimens who've been secured tonight. Like our teenage boy from the Chicago suburb. He's awake now, gagged, eyes big with fear as he's poked and prodded by our doctors. One of the trueborn turns to me as I enter. He wears a long, white lab coat. I've never seen him before, but that's not surprising. I rarely mix with my trueborn superiors. His eyes light up when he sees the humans bound up behind me.
A new delivery of specimens, how wonderful.
He motions to a few empty metal tables. I place the targets on them. This girl definitely has telekinesis, I tell him. She put up a fight when we cornered her. You may want to keep her sedated. A grin crosses the Trueborn's face as he assesses the human.
Perfect, he says. What is your name, soldier?
Vintaro Ushiba. He nods.
You've served beloved leader well, Vintaro. Your work will help us usher in a new age of Mogadorian progress.
Another Trueborn steps up beside him.
The ship is prepped and ready for the flights to West Virginia.
Wonderful, he says, starting for the door.
He points at the girl as he leaves.
And load her onto the ship. It sounds like she may be strong enough to survive Dr. Zarkos's procedures.
Chapter 9. I sleep soundly, satisfied. I wake up hungry for more. The Vatborn barracks are in one of the warship's lower levels, a giant room with a wall full of small sleeping units, just big enough for us to sit up in. They're stacked one on top of the other, from the floor to the ceiling. Inside is a thin foam pad and a wadded-up spare uniform for a pillow. It's all we need. I get only a few hours of sleep before an intercom near my head sounds a shrill buzz. Then a voice from the speaker orders me to report to the council room again. I leap from my sleeping unit, whizzing past the seven below me, landing in a crouch. Then I'm moving through the ship as fast as I can, up the stairs to the higher decks where the Trueborn eats, sleep, and work.
How many targets will we get today?
My fingers twitch in anticipation.
Thank beloved leader for this glorious opportunity.
I'm the first to arrive in the council room, but the other two squad leaders from yesterday follow quickly. They're as excited as I am to be seeing action.
Did you bring in all your humans last night?
The vet with the missing teeth asks. I nod.
We lost one,
the other says, his dark lips grimacing.
A human was trying to fight us off and shot at everything that moved, including our target. Idiot weaklings,
the squad leader with the gap-filled grin grunts.
Had to punish a soldier for it. He'd been toying with the human, playing around, taunting it. I asked him, what would beloved leader think if he knew that you'd gotten his prey killed?
What did he say? I ask. He shrugs.
I think I've still got some of his ash on my uniform. Ask him yourself.
The other leader burst out in laughter at this, slapping us both on the back. I tense up, gritting my teeth. I probably would have punished my own squad, too, if they'd done something so stupid. But this is no laughing matter. We're here to complete a mission, to follow his orders, not to joke around. His squad's failure makes us all look bad. But I don't get a chance to comment on that fact. The doors open and our captain walks in. Immediately, we're all at attention. This time, the reconnaissance officer trails after him. Her head is tattooed in web-like patterns and shaved except for a long, black braid sprouting from the base of her skull.
Dr. Zarkos was thrilled with the work the three of you did last night, the captain says.
His hands are clasped behind his back. You may not be aware, but the Doctor answers to Beloved Leader himself. You've brought honor to your names and to this ship. Well done. The three of us grunt and nod.
Today we have a more interesting task for you, the recon officer says. She taps on a tablet in her hand, and a video plays on one of the screens lining the walls. Humans in front of some sort of waterfall, talking to the camera, pointing to a blue stone. This video was uploaded to the internet just a few minutes ago, the officer continues. It's a message for the Lorik, but broadcast for anyone in the world to see. It's possible we're the first Mogadorians to pick up on it.
These appear to be four more human guard, the captain says. I'm sending all three of your squads to collect them, assuming they're still there. Your secondary directive is to investigate the blue stone on the video. Take a laser cutter, bring back a sample. If this turns out to somehow be Lorelite, Beloved Leader will no doubt be pleased. We'll give you some lead time before we share our discovery with the other captains. I want this to be our victory.
This is a big opportunity, the recon officer says. Securing the humans and taking control of a possible Lorelite deposit will bring glory to you and our ship.
As you may have guessed, based on the context of the message, it's possible the Lorik or their allies will be there. You're to exercise extreme caution.
One side of the captain's lips curls up a little.
And brutality.
This is better news than I could have expected. Still, something doesn't sit well with me. Sir, I say, taking a slight step forward. My eyes are on the ground.
Speak freely, Vintaro,
he says. If it's possible the true Lorik guard might be there, should we not... I trail off, unsure of how to continue. It's not my place to question the judgments or commands of my superiors.
You're wondering why we don't send half the fleet to stop them.
The captain finishes my thought. I don't respond. It doesn't matter. He keeps talking.
Our orders are to secure Chicago. As soon as you're en route, I'll put in a priority one request that I be allowed to send a more substantial amount of troops to the location where this video was shot, Niagara Falls. However, he pauses for a few seconds. High Command has been slow to respond to requests for the last 24 hours. As you know, Beloved Leader is very busy at this moment.
Hail our Beloved Leader, forever may he reign. The captain crosses his arms over his chest.
Now, if you do happen to run across the Lorik while on this mission, and they try to interfere, it would, of course, be your duty to take them out. And doing so would bring glory that would follow you for the rest of your life.
My vision goes red. I hardly comprehend the rest of what the officers say. All I can think of is facing the guard, of taking out their leader, John Smith. How his arrogant face might look as my hands grip his neck. And before I know it, the captain and reconnaissance officer are gone. In half an hour, we've assembled and briefed our squads, loaded our skimmers, and are flying towards Niagara Falls. I assign one of my men to pilot the craft while I triple-check our weapons and supplies, going over possible scenarios in my head. Once we've obtained the humans, should we delay our return? Wait around for the Lorik to show. How long? And what if we're not the first Mogadorians there? It sounded as though anyone could have picked up on this broadcast. If other squads from other warships show up trying to claim our targets or take credit for killing the guard. How far do we go to ensure that victory belongs to our warship? Or to my squad, for that matter.
Vintaro,
one of my men says. It's the newest member. I stare back at him. His nose is bruised and smashed from last night's run-in. He tentatively adds,
Sir.
Speak, I say.
We will make Beloved Leader proud, he says. We'll bring honor to our warship, and the captain will know that it was Vintaro Ushaba who led us to victory.
He hits his chest with his fist and grunts. I return the gesture. My heart drums under my knuckles. All my life, this is what I've wanted. What any Mogadorian wants, to excel and speed our progress across planets and stars. 4 targets, I remind him and the others. You've seen their faces. Lock them down, then find the possible Lorelite deposit. Put a hole in the head of anyone else who dares stand against us.
We're just a few minutes away,
the pilot calls back.
We should... Shit!
What? I ask.
One of the other skimmers just hit their afterburners.
I watch as our allies shoot ahead, trying to be the first ones there, I'm sure, to claim the humans.
Catch them!
I bark, and I can feel our acceleration in my guts. I open up a comm line, reporting back to the warship.
This is Vintara Ushiba. We have no visual on the targets yet, but we're approaching the... Look!
The pilot shouts, bringing up a visual on screen. The other skimmer is hovering above the side of the roaring river. Troops jump to the ground. There are humanoid figures in front of them, but we're too far away to make out what's happening clearly. As we get closer, though, it's obvious these humans are fighting back. The other squad members are firing at them.
Bastards!
I slam my fist against the back of one of the seats in our ship.
They'll kill our targets! Get us!
There's a flash of some kind of red energy across our ship's windshield.
What the?
The pilot starts, but the sounds of the explosion in our hull ripping apart drowns out the rest of his words.